This is the first time I get to say this. The Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick, and that means I can pretty much do whatever the heck I want. Wahaha. And tonight, we have a bunch of people here to talk about stuff. We did win a Hugo, which is awesome, and thanks to everyone who voted. Both of you, we really appreciate it. That was pretty awesome. I love the way, actually, the voting works. You know, essentially three people vote, but they just keep voting from column to column to column to column. So at the end, you end up with like 300 votes, which is just awesome. Right?
No.
I've never been good at math. I don't understand how it works. Just so you understand, I don't have the actual award yet. Supposedly, it's being shipped from London. I don't have any evidence, really, that it's at Gail Carriger's place, but it could be. You never know. Hopefully it'll make it here eventually. I want to introduce some people. These are the people who were crazy enough to say yes when I sent out the email and said, hey, let's get together and do a podcast. We're going to start with Larry Ketcherson.
Patrick, congratulations, man. Well-deserved. Lots of hard work. I hope you get to hold your Hugo in your hands very soon.
That'd be cool. It's all up to Gail.
My name is Larry Ketcherson. I run a security software and services company called Media Sorcery. I occasionally blog out SF Signal. I'm a lifelong Green Bay Packers fan, almost done licking my wounds and looking forward to next weekend.
Very cool. What's next weekend?
Another game that we won't get beat, I hope.
Understood.
There's always hope. There's always next weekend, Patrick.
There you go. And my next panelist likes to call Mr. Silverberg Bob. Hi, Jamie.
Hello, Patrick. Congratulations.
Thanks. Did you like my Bob Silverberg joke?
That was very clever.
I thought so.
Thanks for having me. I'm Jamie Todd Rubin. I am a writer and fiction and nonfiction, more nonfiction these days, I guess, than fiction. But and I've occasionally done stuff on SF Signal and the podcast, and it's been a while, so I'm glad to be back. So thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Next up, we have the king, absolute king of blog commentary. That would be Mr. Paul Weimer.
Hi, Paul Weimer here. I'm a SF Signal regular. I am a co-host on the Skippy and Fanti podcast. I comment all over the internet. Congratulations, Patrick. I guess I'm the only person here out of this set who saw your Hugo in the flesh in Gail Carriger's hands. Mm-hmm. And hopefully she will send it to you.
That would be nice, yeah.
They make Hugos out of flesh now?
Let's not go there. Let's not go there. We've all heard the stories.
Go there.
Paul,
go
did
there,
you? Josh. So, Paul, you were actually at WorldCon and you were nominated as well as part of Skippy and Fanti.
Yes.
And did you have to go through the slightly embarrassing how to handle a Hugo Award should you win one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do not. I'll say this word. Sorry to our one female person. Do not masturbate your Hugo was what we were told.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holding it like the baby is the way that you're supposed to hold it.
Correct. Yeah. The first time that John DiNardo and I went through that particular process, it's like everyone there is a kid going through health class for the first time. You're all just kind of sitting there giggling as this person is very seriously telling you, don't do this.
Well,
for a good reason, because if you did that, you could actually have the base detach from your Hugo and you go bang.
Yes, there are other reasons other than just the way that it looks and you know, the obvious stuff. The Chicago, I think it was, the way they had it was, you know, they had the crystal wings coming off of it or something, and if you held it wrong, you could drop it completely and shatter those.
Mm.
So there are other reasons for it, but yes, it's incredibly awkward. It's an awkward conversation to have, and we're all adults, but it's still an awkward conversation to have. Speaking of Andrea,
yes,
why don't you say hello to people?
Hello, everyone. I'm Andrea Johnson. I run the Little Red Reviewer book review blog.
And is this your first podcast ever?
This is my first podcast. You know, I've done radio and I've done live TV, and this is my first podcast.
Well, welcome.
So I'm very excited. Thank you.
So tell
Yay.
Yay.
Go ahead and finish your intro there.
I blog at Little Red Reviewer, which is littleredreviewer.wordpress.com. I tweet all sorts of ridiculous things. My Twitter handle is redhead5318.
Is there a significance to that number, Andrew?
There is. It is the street address of the house I grew up in.
Oh, okay.
So...
I have family members who do something similar. Mm-hmm. They'll put, like, their zip code.
Yes. People use zip codes. The year they were born, the year their children were born.
The call sign for the USS Enterprise.
Yes.
Or I've more obscure, kind of, sort of, would be Reliant.
That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome. We're glad that you could answer the call and be here tonight.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Josh, is your book out yet?
April.
Okay. Josh Vogt, who I'm going to see soon. You're coming to Mile Icon, right?
I am. I'll be there. Gotta be fun. I'm Josh Vogt, or J.R. Vogt on Twitter, and I just followed you, Andrew. There you go. I'm a freelance writer, editor, and soon-to-be author with a debut novel out in April. That's called Forge of Ashes, and that's going to be a Pathfinder Tales novel from Paizo. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I do a lot of copywriting, and then I've also been doing a lot of writing for RPG developers and publishers. All sorts of adventure modules and NPCs and monster descriptions and all that sort of fun stuff.
Awesome. And to prove that I do actually pay attention to other people's Twitter feed, I would like to introduce, in a voice like finely tuned flatulence, Mr. Jeff Patterson.
You know, I'm so glad you had me on tonight to class the join up. I mean, look at this lineup. My God. Hi, Jeff Patterson here. Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter.
Tweeted out in a voice like finely tuned flatulence.
Yes, I did. It was actually a line from a story that I was writing. So, Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter. I am one third of the podcasting team of the Three Horsemen, which Patrick will not make a joke about.
You don't know that.
And I'm not certain the sun will come up either, but.
How's John Stevens?
He is doing good. We're actually recording this Sunday, but he has been doing pretty well. In a couple of weeks. Yes, we are going to have a fourth saddle on this one. We're very excited. So,
any hints as to who that fourth saddle might be?
Somebody who runs a column on SF Signal. And posts a lot of his or her own stuff. So
nothing vague about that. Hey, Jeff, I just recently rewatched the episode of Archer Vice where it's Kenny Loggins.
Oh.
K-Log.
Yeah. Yep.
As he likes to be called.
Yep.
Doing a duet with Sherlene of Danger Zone.
Yep.
We still want to know what's in the briefcase.
Yeah.
So recently I had an exchange on Twitter where someone said that they really enjoy the podcast. And when they first started listening, they didn't quite get my style. But now, you know, after however many hundreds of episodes, they kind of do. So apparently I grow on people. So if you're new to this podcast, thanks to the Hugo Award, just give it a couple hundred episodes, you know, and eventually I will grow on you.
Patrick, like a fungus. You don't need style. You have a Hugo.
I have a hard time defining my style. I don't know what my style is. Smart ass. Yeah. That's
I vote for smart ass too.
That's pretty much it. Like a smart ass foe or pho fusion. I don't know. So tonight's topic is a simple one, which is why we have so many people on the podcast, because I'm worried that we're not going to have enough to talk about on this one. So I just figured give everybody a shot to say something. But the topic is who is a science fiction, fantasy, or horror? Boy, if I could talk, I haven't been known this for a while. A science fiction, fantasy, or horror author whose work you cannot get enough of is who, and why can't you get enough of them? And we're going to start tonight with Jamie.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well,
And you can't say Robert Silverberg.
Bob, you mean?
Yeah, Bob.
People are like, what? It's sort of embarrassing. I've gone through this over the last several years, this ebb and flow, and I was looking at the list of stuff that I've read this year, and very little genre stuff. I will say that my go-to that I can't get enough of is these days, and then has been for a while, is Jack McDivitt.
Ooh, okay.
And I think it's because, in part, I've grown tired of sort of serial-type series books. What I mean by that is books where you have to have read the previous book and the book before that and the book before that and the book before that to understand everything that's going on. And
it's when, called building a franchise, Jamie.
Yes, I know. I know the purpose of it. I just
Marvel it's the same started thing
with television.
It.
I can't watch TV dramas anymore because it's not like whatever happened to like shows like Magnum PI. So I like what I really like, especially Jack's Alex Benedict and Chase novels, because they're much more like character series where you don't have to know anything about the previous book. You don't have to know the whole backstory or anything like that. And I just, there's something about them that feels fun. And I look forward to those books whenever I know they're going to be coming out. And in fact, I was very fortunate, recently I was, had an email exchange with Jack on something, and he said, so the new book, I just got a bunch of advanced uncorrected proofs. Do you want one?
Nice.
So he sent me one, and I'm trying desperately to finish up the third volume of this Churchill biography. But I have this uncorrected proof sitting next to my bed, and it's very tempting to just want to turn to that and be like, okay, I'm going to read this, but I'm trying to be good. But I just really look forward. His books are fun. They're smart. They're good character. They're, you don't have to know everything that came before. It's sort of my, I read them out of sheer enjoyment. I really like them.
What I have to say about that, Jamie, is that recently I've had to spend a lot of time locked in a room with my mother, who is, binging on History Channel programming, including, episode after episode after episode of Pawn Stars. And there is a dude who has Higgins's canon from Magnum PI and will sell it to you for $40,000. The guys at the pawn shop passed. He did have all the providence and everything. So it is the actual canon that Higgins fired to wake up Magnum.
That is awesome.
I thought so. So McDivitt, I get a lot of his, or I used to get a lot of his stuff. I don't know if I still do or not. How did you come about finding him, discovering him, starting to read him? I mean, what was the process there?
I don't remember. I do know that his one of his first, right around the time my son was born, I read him for the first time, which is, it's only 5 years ago or so. But he's also the first person I read as an ebook. I was looking for something, and we knew we were going to be going to the hospital soon. And I thought, well, I have this new Kindle. I've heard some things about Jack McDivitt. I'll check out his stuff. And he sort of has two, I guess you could call them series that he does. There's the the Alex and Chase, which are more like mysteries, and then there's the I can't think of the name of it now. The other one where it's more like Star Trek. But I just
Lost,
I really
the last ship or something like that, or
it's no, it's the but it's no, it's
I know what you're talking about. I've seen the yeah, I've gotten the dang books.
They're like the I can't. Yeah, my brain is. This has been a really long day, but
if only there was some sort of thing out there that had information that we could...
I see John Pro, the Academy series is what I was thinking of.
Okay,
there we go.
The Academy series. So I just they were what I really like about them, and what I especially especially the Chase and Alex books, is that they're really far future, but the world looks people behave very much the same as they behave today. And I sort of went through the whole far future books where it's an unrecognizable future and things like that. And I kind of like, I've read enough history to where I can sort of see see that people are generally the same and technology changes and stuff, but at its basic level, people seem to act in the same way. And Jack's, that comes through in Jack's books. And plus they're just a lot of fun. And he writes in a very clear, easy sort of Asimovian style. It's pure fun.
Understood. Okay. Let's go next to Andrea.
The author that I can't get enough of currently is Catherine M. Valenti.
Oh, Kat.
I love all of her novels and her short fiction.
So can I make you absolutely jealous? Maybe, yeah. I got to have dinner with her when she was here last year.
Can I hate you just a little bit? I got to meet her at a book signing, and then I gifted myself with a couple of limited editions from Subterranean of some of her novellas. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly not dinner.
No.
But.
Well, Shauna McGuire was there too.
Oh, you're such a jerk. Such a jerk.
So, what is it about Kat's work that just, reaches you and makes you have to read them?
I like what she does with artistic metaphors.
Can you give us a metaphorical example?
Not at the top of my head, but I remember trying to describe Habitation of the Blessed to somebody. And the way I described the book to them was, she uses all of these metaphors in the book, but it's the metaphors are describing exactly literally what's happening.
Okay.
And to me, that was just very magical. And I had never come across something like that before, where, obviously these metaphors will involve lots of, just very artistic words and poetry and, just interesting word choices, but she's literally describing exactly what's going on in a very layered way.
Mm.
And it makes me feel very smart and very, I feel like a literature major when I read her books.
And given that you review books.
Yeah.
How did you first come across Kat? I mean, what was the first thing that made you go, whoa?
When I first started reviewing books, I got most of the books from the library, and I would just kind of peruse the new shelf at mm-hmm. the library for anything with that little science fiction fantasy spaceship sticker on it.
Did you have to push past the DVDs?
No. but I got Habitation of the Blessed out of the library, and it was just amazing from the first page to the last page. I was like, this book is, I feel like I'm listening to a symphony while I'm reading this.
That's awesome. That's good imagery right there.
I was hooked.
And so have you just consumed everything that she's ever written now?
I'm working on it. I have her Myths of Origin, which I picked up maybe 2 years ago, And it's got a lot of her older stuff in it, some of her essays, some of her poetry. And I'm such a cretin. A lot of the poetry is just absolutely lost on me. So that volume I really haven't consumed, but I seek out her books and her short fiction that's in a lot of magazines. It's, you know, I'll buy an anthology because it has one of her stories in it.
Okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, I'm not so good with the poetry myself. People get mad because I always start mine with Nantucket.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's my kind of poetry.
So do you keep your eyes peeled to the SF Signal books receipt posts, you know, looking for anything from her that you can ping DiNardo and say, send me that, I'll review it.
I was totally drooling over the bread we eat in dreams. And I don't think I pinged John for it. I think I was just drooling over it.
You should ping him.
I should.
You should tell him, say, hey, I will totally review that for you. Here's my address.
I want a hard copy, though, and I'm pretty sure that one is an ebook.
Oh.
I've got this thing for hard copies that I just, you know, I have to line them up on the shelf and pick them up and pet them. So it's, you know, I'll happily pay $35 for a Subterranean Press Valenti, but a free ebook, whatever.
Understood. Well, that's cool, though. I think she's an awesome person.
Yeah.
Which just makes it that much cooler that she's such an awesome writer, you know, because you always want these really cool, awesome writers to also be great people and, you know, that you meet.
Yes.
And I admit that the day that I met her and that we did have that dinner, she was having a very bad day, but she was still awesome. So,
it was great to see her at a book signing. And what I most remember from this book signing is there was a lot of, it was a tour for one of the Fairyland books. I think the second book had just come out and she was touring around the country for it. And so there was a lot of teenagers and younger readers in the audience. But we were all asking questions about the Prester John books and about Deathless and about some of her more adult books. And somebody asked her, you know, what of your books would you recommend for younger readers? And it was really cute because other than Fairyland, she had a tough time coming up with which of her books would be appropriate for younger readers. Mm-hmm. You know, they either have adult themes or you know, very intense sex scenes or just themes that younger readers wouldn't be interested in.
Right. Gotcha. Very cool. All right. Yeah. Next up, we're going to say Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
So, you know, from the moment I got the email up until about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I was going to say A.A. Atanasio, who has been one of my favorite writers since I first read Radix in 81 and really got me thinking about SF. But I started going through it and I started looking at the actual rundown and the actual bibliographies of the authors who I really like. And I said, okay, you got to be, if I'm going to be honest with myself, I need to step out of my own comfort zone for this one. So I'm going to go with Kathy Koja, the horror writer.
Ooh.
Specifically her horror stuff. I've read a couple of her young adult books, and I read the book she had out a few years ago, Under the Poppy, which had a lot of the same vibe, but did not, you know, really hammer home the notes like she did with her stuff in the 90s. Her 90s horror stuff, for me, was the perfect mix of visceral horror and psychological horror. But more than that, it really it brought a sensibility to it that a lot of stuff that you find in the new weird kind of carries with it. It really went out of the way to avoid a lot of typical horror tropes. I don't really consider her splatterpunk, even though I did enjoy a lot of that stuff, you know, especially like David Chow. But I did, her stuff was just weird enough in its horror that it really made you're going through the book wondering, okay, what's the threat going to be? What's the monster going to be? What's the evil force going to be? And when it's revealed, you go, okay, that's nothing I've ever heard of before. Tell me more. And it's weird because I don't want to make this as a stylistic comparison, but I got the same kind of vibe when I read like the Robert Jackson Bennett books, like The Troop and American Elsewhere. It was that type of, you know, hit you in the chest kind of impact that she had on me.
Now, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm not a horror reader. I will watch horror movies. I love horror movies. I will watch them all day and night. I love to be scared visually, I guess. And then is just to throw it out there, my brother is staying with us right now, and it's like we're both 12 years old, and every night we're trying to come up with a way to scare the other one, you know, shitless. But and he's kind of hard of hearing at this point because he's 13 years older than I am. He's kind of hard of hearing, and so it's really easy to sneak up on him. But I'm not a reader of horror. You know, I read It until, and actually at the time we didn't have a shower, so I was sitting in the bathtub reading It when the guy was in the bathtub, and that was it for me. I didn't want any more.
That's the beginning of the book.
I know, but it's like, wait a minute. I'm in a bathtub. He's in a bathtub. No. And that was it. And I have never been able to pick up another horror book and read it. So what's the draw for you here? I mean, what do you get out of a horror book, Jeff?
You know, it's there was an essay that I want to say was by I'll look it up and send it to you. It was a great essay that talked about some of the things that are attractive about horror, and I think I only like certain types of horror stories. I'm a big fan of Peter Straub. Ghost Story was another one of those books that by the time you got to what the actual threat was much bigger than you expected it to be and sort of blew you away. But for me, it was it's kind of like playing with the DNA of fantasy and dark fantasy, because it's taking the kind of idea that Lovecraft brought us with, we live in a universe that is 99 point infinite number of nines, more than willing to just consume us and spit us out, with a much more personal sense of horror. When a lot of the characters in Koj's books, you know, realize that something is amiss with the universe that they are now involved in, they kind of take it personally. They wonder if it's their fault. They wonder, you know, how is this going to affect those around me and stuff like that. So it's kind of for me, I like horror stories that tell a very big existential threat, but tell it through a series of very small personal stories.
Okay. So all that drills down to it's about the character.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's always about the character.
Okay. And do you personally, I mean, when they get scared, are you scared? Is it like a visceral thing for you? Is your heart pumping? Are you freaking out a little bit?
There have been scenes that I have read in books that do that, but it's normally not the full-blown horror scenes. If you've ever read Ghost Story by Peter Straub, there's a scene where all the old men are gathered in, I believe, the lawyer's office, and they're listening to a recording that their dead friend made about 40 years earlier in the same office. And the girl who's in the office 40 years ago, when the guy gets up and leaves the room, she picks up the microphone or the tape recorder and starts talking to the guys who are in the room in the present day. That scene scared me more than any evisceration or anything that I've ever read in a horror novel. The whole idea that somebody has that amount of power that they can address you from that big of a gap of years and know what it is that you're doing. To me, that's when I get scared.
Well, Doctor Who did that in Blink.
Yeah, but Doctor Who is Doctor Who. And keep in mind, Doctor Who, I mean, when that show first came back, the BBC had to put up a website every week that basically where they had a bunch of kids watch with their parents, and they basically went through scene by scene what was scary, what the scare index was, you know, et cetera, because they realized, yes, this is going to affect some people. But yes, Blink had some moments of both existential terror and the shock terror when suddenly the angel is upon them, as have many other episodes, you know.
Interesting.
It was designed to be a scary show for kids.
Which reminds me, Doctor Who is kind of boring right now.
I'm loving it.
But are you? I'm just
yes,
so
I am.
Ridiculously bored with it, and I'm at the, almost at the end of my rope. But I found it interesting that there was an uproar of like three people calling into the BBC because a lizard woman kissed a human woman. Really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So apparently, you know, Captain Jack, they don't have a problem with, but a lizard? I don't know.
Jack probably boinked more than one lizard in his day.
Larry.
After that
horror round, you usually come up with some sort of family-friendly thing. Were you going family-friendly today?
Family-friendly. I think that's the first time in my life I've been described that way, and I want you to make sure that DiNardo mentions that in the notes.
No, Larry, I've seen several restraining orders that have said he is very family-friendly.
Yeah, from 50 feet away, he's very family-friendly. So I kind of did the same thing Jeff did. I had an idea of an author. I was actually going to go with Neal Stephenson because I just ate up Cryptonomicon and the Baroque Cycle. But I haven't kept up with all of his recent releases, so I kind of disqualified him, and I went back to my old standby, Dan Simmons. Mm. And really for the same reason that I liked the Baroque Cycle so much. I've been having a side chat with Jamie with my keyboard on silent about the Churchill history trilogy that he's been reading. I mean, I just if I count the number of books in my study, I probably have more history books than I do genre books. And both Stevenson and Simmons do in my opinion, a fantastic job of weaving in real history with, you know, sometimes not genre-specific stories, but other times stories that you can't place them. You can't place them in fantasy or science fiction or history. I mean, I thought that Drood was I couldn't tell which parts of Drood were real and which parts were drug-induced imaginations. I mean, Drood was just a fantastic book. And Simmons, you know, I think I've been disappointed in him maybe once when he got preachy at the end of Black Hills. But other than that, I mean, you can pick up a Dan Simmons doorstop and just absolutely cruise through it, and it's terrifically written. I was reading The Abominable, and I don't know if you guys have read it, and I won't
scared
spoil
the hell
it.
Out of me.
Yeah. But the first part, Jeff, it's all climbing, right? I mean, he's
yeah.
I brought that for my brother, who's a voracious reader, but he's not a science fiction reader by any stretch, and he's not a Dan Simmons person. And he's reading it, and he goes, you know, this guy actually makes something that I have no interest in ever doing really, really interesting. You know, he's going through all of this. You know, 19, you know, between World War One and World War Two, climbing gear and why the climbing gear is so bad and how many people die because their ropes are made this way. And, you know, how the guy invents parachute pants, basically, all while, you know, weaving in this this story that, as Jeff says, will scare the crap out of you. I mean, it's and it's got some, back to his Song of Kali days horror stuff, just kind of thrown in just for fun, right? Yeah. In the middle. And so I think he's never boring, and he's never predictable. I mean, he's got a book coming up that tries to intermingle Sherlock Holmes and Henry James at the Chicago World's Fair, and I think they're trying to track down a murderer. I haven't read the whole back cover on it. It's supposed to come out next year, but I mean that sounds like something that's right up his alley. I mean, he'll pull it off, and he'll mix in the kind of history that I like to read when I'm reading history with a great story.
And go ahead.
Yeah, if I can just throw one thing in there, when you mentioned that, the one thing I always remember about Simmons is when I was reading The Terror, the novel about the Northwest Passage expedition.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I listened to the audiobook of that during one of the hottest summers I had ever experienced. So I'd be in the car, and I had a 2-hour commute, I'd be in the car with the AC cranked listening to that book. And that book, on every single page, he reminds you how cold it is.
So did you feel cold listening to it?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. I got so utterly cold listening to it that when I got out of the car into the 112-degree heat, it was a visceral shock to me because I felt so utterly chilly while driving. But the thing about it is this, and he does the same thing at Abominable. When he sets – this is going back to Patrick's question to me earlier. When he sets a mood like that and reinforces it at every possible chance, everything becomes scary.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that I'm shocked by something that happens. It's the fact that I'm in utter terror of the setting that these characters are in.
Yeah, he puts them in. I wrote the same thing you just said, Jeff, in a review at some itty bitty website called SF Signal about the Abominable. I mean, you just feel the cold, you know. And it's almost like a setup. I started to go back in the Terror and say, did he steal the same damn paragraphs from the Terror that made me feel cold and scared there and move them over? Because
I thought the same way. Yeah.
But he just kind of sets you up, doesn't he? I mean, he's, you're sleeping outside. You're in these incredibly old pieces of equipment that he's set you up for before. You're freezing your ass off that he set you up before, and there might be something out there trying to kill you. So now you're cold and you're scared. You got crappy equipment and something's coming. I mean, it's a wonderful setup.
Sounds like a Liam Neeson movie.
Yeah.
Like The Gray. Yeah.
Everything's a Liam Neeson movie. And I will, just before I shut up, I did have a couple of others that I was going to choose. One of them, there was an article recently in the Completist column on SF Signal about Mary Doria Russell, and I just can't, if she'd written more books, I'd have put her up. But I have every, not just The Sparrow and Children of God, which are probably the genre-specific ones, but every book she's written I think is... It's the symphonic lyrical Andrea description. You know, she writes in such a way that I actually go back. I never reread paragraphs. I just keep plowing forward, but I keep going back and rereading them, saying how exactly did she say that in that in that way? It's just I like Tad Williams, but I won't read his damn cat book. So I've read everything Tad Williams has ever written, but I won't read the cat book.
I'm not a big Tail Chaser song.
I'm not a cat. I don't like cats.
I understood.
They like meat, but I don't like cats.
So how did you actually say how you came to start reading Dan Simmons?
Hyperion. Way back when.
But how? I mean, did you just pick it up, start reading it? Did someone tell you to read it? Did you see a review on, like, a 1-star review on SF Signal from DiNardo? I mean, what made you decide to read that book?
Well, Patrick, I know I look young, but I think I'm probably the oldest one on this podcast. So my reading actually predates SF Signal. I don't know if you can believe that or not. I know that's hard to believe. No, I don't really know. I think Hyperion was one of those cover buys. You know, you're cruising in the bookstore and you see the Shrike on the cover and you're like, now that guy's cool. I want to see what he's going to kill.
Also had excellent jacket copy too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, from there it was all of those books, and then Ilium and Olympus, which some people just kind of say is a rambling ode to Shakespeare. I mean, I ate it up. I thought he should have stopped after one book, because I thought the one book was cool, but I did like how he polished it off.
I was disappointed in Olympus. I loved Ilium, but Olympus, there were some things he introduced in there that I wasn't so thrilled with.
Like what?
Like the whole Muslims on the on the frozen nuclear submarine that are going to suddenly kill us all, that suddenly comes out of nowhere plot.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell, Dan? That has nothing to do with anything else. All these, no, nothing to do with the Moavex or the Ascended AI or anything else. Where did this come from? It's like thrown out of left field, and it really left a sour taste in my mouth.
Well, if Stephen Moffat had did it, you know, it would just be Jeff going, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I'm not sure I get that, but I'm going to chuckle anyway.
Josh, you're up next.
Yes. Am I allowed to say more than one author?
Sure.
Right. I think I already cheated that way, Josh. So
if I could,
let you come back, Andrea.
Okay.
I have like four or five listed just in case somebody else stole one of mine.
Yeah, so did I.
That's actually why I'm going through everybody on the list before Paul, because part of the fun is waiting to see if other people named the ones on Paul's list, and then he gets here and he's like, but I had all these names.
All right, let's see if I can negate Paul's list then.
Okay.
All right. Well, the first one is Aliette de Bedard. I really love her Obsidian and Blood books, if anyone has read those.
Yes.
It's like taking urban fantasy, you know, your mystery, your private investigator type stories, and sticking them back in the Aztec times. So you've got all the blood sacrifices. You've got, she has this really well flowing prose and but also extremely detailed. She just brings all these really stark details into the story so that you just get a perfect sense of what it was like. She's obviously done her cultural research pretty in depth. So that, very high action, lots of graphic fights, and just love those books a lot. She's also got dozens of short stories published. She's won at least several awards, if not more, over the years. So I've kept track of her short stories as they come out in pretty much every major magazine out there, I think, by this point.
Josh, I have two words for you. Fish sauce. I knew you would get that.
Yes. All right. So that's one of my primary ones. And I'm hoping that she does more of the novels. She's just got the three of them right now set in that world, and then another standalone. But hopefully she'll do more. And then she's got a bunch of short stories set in that Aztec time period as well. The other one that I was going to speak to was Tim Pratt, or T.A. Pratt. I really like his work a lot. He has the Marla Mason series, which is kind of an urban fantasy, but it is an urban fantasy. And then he's also got, he's another Pathfinder Tales author, and he's got three books now. And his work is just fun. It's just flat out high energy, high action, really fun characters. He's really excellent at banter and witty dialogue, so you're just kind of chuckling the whole way through his stories just because of that. So yeah, those are ones that I'm always looking for new stories with, looking for their new novel. I know Tim Pratt, he had his original four Marla Mason books with a publisher, and then he got dropped, and since then he's been crowdsourcing novellas and novels in the same series pretty, I think, decently successfully for the most part. So.
And how did you discover both of those?
Actually, there were a couple years where I was doing more consistent book reviews, both on a journal, a newspaper website, and then also did some sporadic ones for SF Signal. And so I believe I found both of them by getting review copies.
And just for the listeners' benefit and for Andrea, sporadic means two.
No. I did like...
I'm teasing.
Thanks a lot.
Like a dozen or something before I stopped, so...
I'm teasing. Come on now. And what... I mean, just what made you have to keep going back over and over and over and over again?
Well, again, for Pratt's, it's the entertainment value. His stories are just really fun. You can fly through them very quickly, but they're also satisfying. They're not... You know, they're not bubblegum stories or popcorn stories. The characters have issues they deal with, and he has such weird situations that they get into and weird creatures that they deal with. You just have to keep reading to see what he comes up with next. And for Aliette, it's honestly the uniqueness of the setting. There's just nothing else quite like it out there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very cool. So are you going to be on any panels at Mile High Con, Josh?
I'm planning on it, yes. I don't think they've sent out the official schedule, but I'm registered as one of the participants.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I'm going to give you a shot. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Go for it.
Okay. So, no one has mentioned anybody from Epic Fantasy, so the first person I thought of for this is Kate Elliott. I'll answer your question that you were asking at the tail end of everyone else's first. Back in 1997, in the days before I was a blog commenter or a reviewer, or if there was really much of an internet, I discovered new books by reading award nomination lists. And in 1997, I saw the Nebula Award nomination list, and I thought, I don't recognize this author or this author. And so I started picking up them. And one of them was King's Dragon by Kate Elliott. So I picked it up, and I started reading it. It's like, this is amazingly good. This is as good as that George R. R. Martin's book that was also on the same ballot.
And then you picked up Prince of Dogs, and it kicked you in the nuts.
Prince of Dogs does in the nuts. Yes, it does. The whole series is tough. Kate is not unwilling to go dark if needed. And have you read the Crossroads series?
Not yet.
Yeah, if you want kick the nuts and having people go into dark situations, yeah, you thought Prince of Dogs was bad? Yeah, but that's not why I read Kate Elliott. I read Kate Elliott because of deep and intricate world building. She has strong female characters. She loves to explore issues and aspects of epic fantasy that not every author decides to deal with. And yes, she does go dark if needed. I'd read, you know, 1980s epic fantasy, you know the usual Eddings and the whole crew, and this Kate Elliott was kind of like a breath of fresh air. It's like, this is different. This is epic. This is adult's not the right word. This is mature epic fantasy, and I was just hooked. I started reading backward in her catalog and started reading forward ever since.
Okay, number two.
Number two, Martha Wells. Martha Wells is one of those authors that doesn't get anywhere near enough credit. She's written quasi-historical fantasy with the Ill Rain series. She's written non-human fantasy with her Raxura. She's written YA with her two recent novels from Angry Robot before Strange Chemistry went. You were going to do that before Strange Chemistry went, unfortunately, went under the plug. She again, like Kate, brings very interesting female characters, very interesting social dynamics. She loves to weave the intricate webs of character relations, character motivations, and really get deep with why characters do what they do. And because the author writes them that way, but they're believable characters. They're not just little stick figures wandering around the giant epic fantasy landscape.
Are you making fun of XXCCDYDXXD?
I will neither confirm nor deny that. My third is Daniel Abraham. Daniel Abraham is the Swiss Army knife of writers, in my opinion. Everything he seems to try to write, every subgenre seems to turn out very well. He's written urban fantasy. He's written epic fantasy on his own. His original Long Price Quartet series is an amazingly good and underappreciated series. He has a current epic fantasy writing, and of course he has that little space opera he's writing with Ty Frank that Sci-Fi is doing.
Oh, just that little thing.
That little thing, yes. Yeah. So he's got fingers in so many pies. It's hard for me to even keep up with his work these days.
And Josh and I are totally going to have dinner with him in October.
Oh, man. I am jealous. I have not yet met Daniel.
He and Ty are coming here for Mile High Con.
Oh, shoot. I mean, I finally got to meet Kate at Long Con, which was great. I got to meet Martha at Convergence, which was great. I have not yet met Mr. Abraham, unfortunately. And my fourth choice, if it was a lot of fourth choice, would have been Aliette. So.
And you know what I'm going to say to Daniel Abraham when I see him for the first time in person?
What are you going to say?
I'm going to say I'm still pissed off about Star Wars.
hey Patrick, going to Anomaly Con?
Not that I'm aware of.
Cory Doctorow is going to be there this year.
Oh, Cory Doctorow, he's cool, but he will not do interviews on weekends. So it's kind of hard for me to do interviews with him being in the UK.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to do an interview with him at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, Andrea.
Yes.
You wanted to throw out another author. Is it Antony?
No. No, I will very quickly throw out two more authors. Folks that I can't get enough of, that I go right to if I want to read something that I know I'm going to have a, that I know I'm going to like. Jeff Vandermeer and Stephen Brust.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
With Vandermeer, it's just I fell in love with New Weird at first sight. I remember reading Shriek and Afterward and thinking to myself, I have no idea what the hell just happened, but I loved this. And with Stephen Bruce, he was one of the first fantasy authors that I read, and I was very apprehensive, thinking, oh, a book about an assassin? This doesn't really sound like my cup of tea. And I loved it before I finished it.
Now, we haven't, we've said that we're going to do an episode of the podcast where we're talking about Vandermeer's Annihilation.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's completely my fault. Life interrupted on the day of the Hugos. My mom, I mean, literally 10 minutes after the Hugo Awards were announced for Best Fan Cast, I was speeding to the ER because my mom had broken her leg and dislocated her ankle and broke her foot and all this kind of good stuff. So life has completely interrupted. I do want to have that podcast soon where we talk intelligently about Annihilation.
Ooh, can I be on it?
Yes, you can.
Woohoo!
And anybody else who has actually read the book, you know, we're going to do something. Just give me a little bit more time. I'm going to be traveling next week. I'm going to take my Kindle and hopefully I'll be able to finish the book while on the road. So, and then we can actually have an intelligent conversation about a single book, which is a completely unique idea that's never been done before in any other podcast. Shut up, Jeff. So. This has been a great list. I love all the authors that you guys are talking about. This is just great, and I can imagine that someone somewhere listening to this podcast is scribbling all these names down furiously and hopefully creating the HTML code that will go in the post and make it easier for me. But we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes. Paul, I'm curious. Did you want to throw anything out there about LunCon 3 and WorldCon, about your experience there? Did anybody else on the podcast go? Jamie, were you able to go?
No, I was here.
Okay, and I think Josh stayed here in Colorado.
Yes.
Larry probably stayed in Texas.
I never stay in Texas, but I did not go to London.
Okay, and Jeff, I know that you were trying to go, but then you thought, wait, what the hell am I doing?
No.
So, Paul, you're the sole representative of LunCon 3 on the podcast tonight. How did it go? What were your experiences? Did you have fun? Did you get sick? Did you eat blood sausage or blood pudding or anything with blood in it?
Well, my traveling companion did get sick and not feeling well, so she missed most of the convention.
That sucks. Yeah, that's
so.
Sucks.
I mean, yeah, she kind of got con crud before there really was a con. So, but it was my first WorldCon, and kind of weird that aside from Fabio, I was really only as a single person at a WorldCon, which is kind of weird. I guess Gail, if you
qualifies.
Told her,
Gail qualifies.
Yeah, and Gail. So because Gail and Fabio and me are the only people who have some signal there, which is kind of weird. So it was a large con, very nice turnout, very gigantic space. I mean, trying to find people was hard. I mean, there were people I wanted to meet at this con I never saw hide or hair of. And other people I saw, oh, there goes X-Wave walking by, and didn't get to talk to her. Crap.
It's always difficult when there's multiple hotels and multiple bars.
Yeah, there was no single bar con per se. I mean, there was stuff down in the Fan Village, but the Fan Village was kind of a scrum, in sort of like a 14th century theater where everyone's standing around, no place to sit down. So that was suboptimal in some ways. I didn't get to see many panels. I was on one panel, and a couple panels I was on. Were pretty good. It was really good discussion. A lot of world SF, which is near and dear to our Skippy and Fanty hearts, as my Skippy and Fanty hat. And the Hugo ceremony and the whole pre-Hugo stuff was amazing. It was an experience I'd never gotten to go through and may never go through again, but I got to go through it this time. And I mean, when I saw Peter Davidson walk into the pre-Hugo party, my jaw just dropped. Yes, I know you're giving Doctor. I know you have Doctor crap, Patrick, but when I saw the fifth Doctor walk, it was like, holy shit.
No, Peter Davidson's awesome.
I apparently didn't see him. David Tennant was also there, but I didn't see him.
David Tennant, there's lots of pictures.
I somehow missed him in the party, but I got to see Peter Davidson, and that was great.
Did you offer him some celery?
I did not offer him some celery because I don't want him hating me or groaning or rolling his eyes. or banning me from his presence.
No,
right,
you just
like
put a little
that.
Peanut butter on it. It makes it easier to eat.
Sure. You try that, Patrick, and
that,
see how.
Hey, that's actually
get.
That's actually how I grew up. My grandmother would put peanut butter on celery and say, "Here, eat this."
Yeah, no, you try doing that with Peter Davidson, how far you get.
I walked up to Neil Gaiman with two children and pushed them at him and said, "Show him your sonic screwdrivers." I don't think I would have a problem with Davidson.
Yeah, I guess you'd win in that case. I'm a little too shy.
Mm.
But yeah, it would. I don't know if I'll go to Worldcon next year because it's in Spokane, and that's just Spokane. But going to London was a lot of fun. I didn't get to see enough of London, but you know, that's how it goes.
Alrighty. Well, very cool. I'm glad you had a good time.
I wish more SS Pignol could have gone. I could have.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. And it's kind of funny that we say that here. I've talked to a lot of people. It's like, wow, it's just so hard to go, you know, to another country and do that. And meanwhile, you know, all these people from other countries always come here. But at the same time, they always complain about how difficult it was to come here, you know,
yeah,
for the various Worldcons. It just was not in the cards for me. Just no way. I couldn't pull that together.
I know. My bank account is screaming at me for having done this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes. And I know that, you know, Karen typically goes, her and Curtis, but, you know, they've got the baby and all that kind of stuff, so they weren't able to go. So yeah, and John is just lazy, you know. He just likes to stick around Texas.
You can't get bagels anywhere near London. So
you would think that London would have something that would appeal to DiNardo and get him to go over there, but yeah, I don't know.
Baked beans for breakfast, which kind of confused me in the hotel. I was like, what the hell is this?
Oh, but it's so good.
So good.
It's not that I don't like
so
baked
good.
Beans, but what do you eat them for breakfast for? Like, well, this isn't the wrong meal, man.
Tomatoes for breakfast. That got me.
when my friends from Coventry visited years and years ago, they brought me several things. One of the things they brought me was jelly babies. Gosh, go figure. The other thing they brought me was, what is it called? They eat it on bread.
Marmite?
Yeah, Marmite. And they're like, here, Marmite. You know, this is something that we eat. And it's like, oh, okay. And they put it on a little bit of toast. Here, try it. It's like, oh, my God. This is the most disgusting thing I've ever put in my mouth. And now I must spit it out.
Wasn't it Gail who did a tweet about, she said, going to England, it was the first country she didn't have to smuggle Marmite into?
Oh, it was disgusting. No Marmite for me. Sorry. All right. Well, let's go around and do some final thoughts real quick. Josh, go. Final thoughts. You said AnomalyCon. Where are you going to be? What are you doing?
AnomalyCon. I'll be on there. That's up in Denver. It's a kind of a steampunk themed con. It's been growing every year. It's run by Karanda Seibert. I hope I got the name right. I went there last year. It was a lot of fun. It's a little smaller, but it's great. Cory Doctorow is the guest of honor for 2015, and I'll be on one of the panelists and probably doing a booth with a lot of the authors. And yeah, if you make it, we'll hang out.
Very cool. And then the book comes out in April, and again, I'll see you in October.
Absolutely.
Jamie.
You know, one thing I wanted to say was regarding Jack McDivitt was that back in the year, you know, years and years and years ago, people used to talk about Clifford Simic as being the nicest guy in science fiction. Nobody ever said a bad thing about him. He never said a bad thing about anybody else. And that is definitely Jack today. And case in point, I have completely accidentally stood him up twice.
Oh, man.
Once I was late for breakfast with him by accident, and then the second time was it the Hugo night in San Antonio, where we had arranged to have drinks and I completely forgot. And it's the most horrible feeling in the world, but he just next morning he was like, oh, don't worry about it, you know, these things happen. So he's really a classy guy. And I also wanted to mention that I did have a second person in mind, and that was Lauren Buquez. I love The Shining Girls, and I haven't read it yet, or I'm not even sure if it's out yet, but I'm really looking forward to Broken Monsters.
So, two things. When you did finally have breakfast with him, did he get really angry and snarky with the wait staff and make you worry about your food the way other people have done to you?
No.
Okay.
But it wasn't a buffet either.
I did that to him and to Donardo. But anyway, Lauren Bucus is awesome, and she's one of the people. She's actually the first person I ever interviewed using the Zoom H2, and I didn't push the button twice. And so we did the entire interview with me thinking that it was recording, and it wasn't recording. Uh-oh. And so when we did the actual recording, she kept whispering to me, "Is it recording? Is it recording?" Yeah, it was hilarious. Larry, final thoughts?
Well, I get to see DiNardo tomorrow. I'm not sure if I'm excited about that or not yet. I'm gonna try to pump myself up later for
it. Are you guys gonna stand in line together for the new iPhone 6? I know he's excited about that. I know that people think that I am a massive Apple fanboy, but DiNardo trumps me.
Wow.
Big time. I have never seen anyone as excited about the iPhone 6, the 6 Plus, and the new iPhone watch thingy as DiNardo.
Yeah, we're actually going to go get our wrists shaved together so we can put our watches on there.
He was texting me during the presentation thing. Are you looking at this? Oh, this is so cool. This is the neatest thing. You know, I mean, he was just losing it. It was hilarious.
Well, I will say that I buy more gadgets mainly because our customers, I mean, most of our security software customers or healthcare customers, and physicians are the biggest Apple fanboys in the friggin' world. So I have to get one of everything as soon as they come out. And I'm not real thrilled with the new iPhones. Frankly, I like the size of the current iPhones. The 4.7 inch, I think, is just a little bit too big. The iPhone 6 Plus, I mean, unless you're wearing cargo pants, and most of my customers don't, you know, there's no place to put it. And, you know, as much as I love the idea of wearables, I haven't worn a watch since I graduated high school, and it's going to have to be a hell of a watch for me to shave my wrist with DiNardo. So yeah.
I'm not a fan of watches either. I haven't worn a watch in a decade or more. But I know that, like I said, John was freaking out over it. He was taking pictures of it on his phone and sending them to me, sending me little clips from the video. I mean, it's just, I've never... I have talked before about being an Apple fan, but just, you know, he's ridiculously addicted to them. So,
well, you know, his favorite feature that they have is, you know, it's got a lot of health features in it, and it's got four sensors on the back. And if you want, you can send your heartbeat to another one. And he really wanted to send his heartbeat to all the SF Signal irregulars almost on a regular basis. So I was going to write him a program, you know, an if this, then every time his heartbeat got above a certain level, it would just send it out. And it's going to beat with an SF Signal logo for you guys. So he was thinking about you.
It's funny because he bought an iPad for his wife. But then he kept it himself. Can you believe that?
Well, I can. I can.
It's just terrible. No,
I'm actually, John and I, John's doing a little bit of a book handoff. He's got a Harry Harrison memoir that I want to read and review for SF Signal. So we will not be shaving our wrists, even though we would both probably like to.
If you'd said Harry Henderson... I would have been
Harry Henderson.
It. Yeah,
is he still alive, man?
Harry and the Hendersons.
I don't think Harry and the Hendersons survived the '80s.
That was John Lithgow's finest movie.
Yeah. Some days I wake up and I don't think I survived the '80s, but that's another podcast.
All right, Andrea. Final thoughts.
I will be at Context in Columbus at the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
Be on some panels. My first time.
Do you have an iPhone so John can do FaceTime with you?
No, I have a Samsung. I have an Android.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing any cosplay?
He really doesn't like Android.
I'm going to bring my Sabitha Bellicoros costume with me.
Awesome costume.
Oh, it was so much fun to make. And then I'm working on a Katamari Damacy cosplay for Confusion in January.
Very cool.
Nice.
I get to be one of the media guests of honor at Capricorn.
Awesome.
Yeah, that will be in February, I think. Me and Danilio, so. If you want to see me actually say, sing the Angry Robot theme song live and go, Angry Robot.
I want to see that.
Yeah, come to Capricorn. Paul, I kind of already gave you final thoughts when we talked about Worldcon a little bit, but did you have anything else you want to throw out there?
I'm not apparently going to any cons for the rest of the year unless I get talked into going to ICON or WindyCon. I haven't decided as yet, but otherwise, yeah, this is, WonCon was the end of my con season, but no.
All right.
Well, WonCon was a good way to end it.
There you go. Jeff.
If I had two other authors, I would have mentioned Kristen Catherine Rush and Mike Resnick for reasons that everybody who's literate in science fiction knows already. I will probably be at Capclave next month. I do not have a membership for World Fantasy, but I am a short drive away if anyone's there and wants to get together.
Go do BarCon.
I'll be at both of those, Jeff.
Huh?
I'll be at both of those.
I was too late trying to get a World Fantasy membership.
Do BarCon. I mean, that's what Anilio did at World Fantasy. He just sat in the bar the whole time. I don't think he went to a single panel.
I will probably try to do that. Look up on Twitter.
Yeah, I couldn't.
First time I met Jamie at Capclave, I spotted him by his voice. So, I'll be up there. Jeff Patterson 11, and on Twitter, and Three Horsemen.
There you go. I don't know why. I don't know why the random plug for Sleepy Hollow's new season, but whatever. Okay, so. I want to thank everybody for coming on the podcast tonight, and we will get together again soon. We are going to talk about Annihilation soon. Go and check out sfsignal.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am ATFMB, all things from my brain. And thanks again for the Hugo. That was awesome.
Yay.
It was the highlight of that, of like 9 minutes of my life, and then, I broke my ankle.
I was thrilled that you name-checked all the regulars, including me, in the speech.
Did you like that?
Yes. I appreciated that. Yes, I did. It tickled some of the sting out of the defeat a little.
Well, I'm glad that helped, Paul. Because
and Fred was happy that his name was pronounced incorrectly.
No, Gail pronounced my name properly.
Gail did the best she could. Gail, I think, was freaking out a little bit.
She did an excellent job.
It's easy to say yes, absolutely. I'm totally willing to accept for you, and then to actually be up on the stage, and freaking out. I remember DiNardo said he would accept for Starship Sofa, I think, or something like that, and it was just ridiculously nervous about having to go up on stage, and then when they called his name. He got tunnel vision and was again ridiculously nervous as he went up there. So
I accepted for Ken Liu at the Nebulas, and then I also accepted for him at the WISFA Awards, and so I'm two for two for him. He's won every award I've accepted for him.
Wow!
There you go.
Good to know.
But yeah, it was very important for me to put as many names in there as I possibly could. I didn't want to overwhelm and have and take up a ton of time up there. But I it was very important to put all the names in there because this podcast would not exist without all the people who come on week after week and let me torture them with really bad jokes.
Well, we do keep coming back. So.
You do, yeah. So I don't know if that says more about you or me. All right. So thanks again for coming on, everybody. I hope that you have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Congratulations, Patrick, and thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends. And have them tell their friends, and their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.